ever try to run again for president, Harris, it's from, you know, quote, a Democratic strategist, and he's talking about why she is the worst possible candidate to run again, because she can't be a populist candidate. That it's impossible for her to be a populist candidate. And this whole article really got my attention, Kim, because nowhere does he talk about, sexism, racism. He's just, talking about white working class at the end. He, makes it very clear that's who he wants to make sure comes, quote, back to the Democratic Party. It is bizarre. Have you, what do you think about this? And he said, and she might be okay to run for governor of California, but I don't know. Come on, Kim, what is going on? Is this more white consolidation of power? Tell us.
It's exactly what we were talking about last night, right? This is erasing the 92%. Who got it right, and the person that 92% overwhelmingly supported. And at the same time, erasing all of the economic realities that 92% was dealing with, the fact that they made choices, the fact that Harris did have concrete plans for things like keeping down prices of groceries, providing opportunities for first-time homebuyers. Trump didn't offer anything concrete with respect to appeals to the working class. This is identity politics. That's what that is. Mm-hmm. It is his whiteness that appeals to white voters, and it's not just working class voters. That's the other thing that's crazy about this, Monday morning quarterbacking. They're turning the white vote into a working class vote, and they're turning the black vote into a non-working class. It's just ridiculous, right? The only thing that makes it make sense is they're trying to find code words to talk about race and misogyny, and they're trying to do it by gaslighting us into thinking that what we saw, we didn't see. It's like, that old song, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? They're basically telling us that what we saw, we didn't see. And so there's just so much of this that we're seeing over and over and over again. That's where our immediate fight is. Yeah, we need to fight against these nominees. And the last one you mentioned, absolutely, we have to go to the mat. And we also have to deprive people of the cover that says because somebody is an immigrant and because somebody is non-white, that therefore they're going to somehow be for civil rights. Come on now. We've lived long enough to know that's not true. I mean, look, we've seen Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court for 3 decades. We know that's not true. So it's definitely not true with respect to this nominee. But more broadly, we have to have a fight in our own party and with our allies about their desire to back away from the formula that got us this far. And we're not going to regain anything by acquiescing to this liberal ambivalence about whether they can afford to talk about racial justice anymore. All Woo. Of these nominees, they are Woo. The anti-woke people, the anti-racism people. We can't be silent about that. There is no neutrality in a society like ours. We have to be pro-democracy, pro-anti-racism, pro-inclusion, and we cannot broker any ambivalence about that and hope that we ever can win again. We win from how we won before, and that's telling the truth and bringing all of our constituencies to the table.
I've got to ask the question, because it sort of vacillates sometime in my mind, and it may for some of the listeners as well. When we're talking about a working class voter, are we defining that as a working class person by economics, a working class voter by their issues, a working class voter by, their status, I mean, how do we define this working class title that we're laying, the label that we're laying out there?
So my view is that they're defining working class by race. Right. My view is we define working class by people, you know, who are two paychecks ahead of themselves, right? People who, you know, are the at will, the people who are struggling to buy a home, people who work for a living. And look, if we do it relative, you know, to the billionaire class, if that's what we're looking at, the 98% are working class, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. none of us have the wealth and the ability to buy. I mean, look, let's face it. Elon Musk bought the presidency for Donald Trump. Woo! And he's his boy now. Along with a good assist, you know, from Jeff Bezos. And a few of the other billionaires. It's not an accident that this cabinet is probably going to be the wealthiest cabinet ever. They basically bought their way back into government. And they're going to govern from their interests. As long as we are using working class as a code word for white and not as a code word for everyone who stands to lose from the policies that are going to be put in place to limit government's ability to ameliorate some of the consequences of the huge concentration of wealth that's happened over the last decade. That's all of us. But as long as we're mired in this idea that he stands for us, and by the we, I mean the MAGA and the MAGA sympathizers, they're not going to be able to be brought into coalition to fight what's going to be coming down the pipe. And that stuff is not just stuff that's going to change things for 4 years. This is going to change things for a century. We're talking about dismantling a century's worth of progress, and we're talking about being in the hole for a century in the future. This is the fight of everyone's lives, but right now, most people don't seem to know it. That's what we've got to be about over the next 100 days.
My.
Professor Crenshaw mentioned, you know, kind of going back to the article, I also think that there's an elephant in the room as far as accountability, more specifically for that Democratic strategist in the Democratic Party in general, right?
Yeah.
You know, many people, and this is a large sentiment, are tired of the promises being made but not delivered, right? You know, you will give us a spectacle, but you won't give our community stimulus, right? So when you kind of look at that, we've essentially, or the Democratic Party more specifically, has allowed the Republican Party to, in a sense, take away that you know, we're the fighter for the working class. You know, we care about the average American. When you look at the policy, the Democratic Party has generated more jobs, you know, over the last three Democratic presidencies versus the last three Republican presidencies, right? Democratic policy tends to align more with, you know, Social Security, all of these things that tend to actually help the working class people. But they've done a not so great job with being able to market that. That's not a Kamala Harris thing. That's a party problem, right?
Yeah,
you know,
amen.
We look across many different elections across the country, not just the presidential election, where many liberal policies were voted into action, more specifically those for reproductive rights. But the politicians themselves were losing elections. I think they need to get back to the basis and to the foundation and in actually defining the holistic thing of what it means to be working class, not only white working class, but black working class, brown working class, and actually get their hands back in the dirt and in the mud and reconnect with their base, with their foundation that has allowed the party to thrive. Because they don't, we'll continue to see these things. And if the predictions based on these nominees and, you know, what Project 2025 has blatantly showed us, if those things occur and this playbook doesn't change, it'll only progressively get worse and worse and worse. You know, we have a nation of people right now that are devoid of hope. You know, looking back to, I remember being 10, 11 years old and hearing President Obama and that being my very first, you know, interest in civic engagement. I think that's what people need now in this country, and that is what the Democratic Party really needs to do some soul searching about. How do we get back to our roots, and how do we get people to believe again? Because belief is the one thing that transcends policy, that transcends discrimination, and that's one thing that has always brought Americans together. And they need to find a way to emphasize that again, to bring it back to the forefront, and to unite the people back for a common cause, which is our American values, our virtues, our morals, and the idea that we all have the right to freedom, justice, and liberty.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I just, as we come to the close of our show, I just really want to, you know, thank all of our guests. They've been awesome. This has been such a good reprise of the Teletown Hall we had yesterday, last night. But, and folks, it's not the end. We're going to have some more. Get ready. January's coming. We're going to have some more. And we're getting ready for that trial against Jackie Johnson, the prosecutor of who failed to do her job and has been indicted on criminal charges for doing so. Her trial in the Ahmaud Arbery case, her trial starts on January 21st. Mark your calendars right now, January 21st. We will be there as TJC to support the Ahmaud Arbery family, Marcus Arbery, and all of who and the whole community that's been impacted by this. So as we go, as we get ready to depart, I'm going to turn it over to Daryl. But Daryl, one word. I just want to say again my love to the 92%, our love to every organizer who keeps fighting, our love to the 75 million people who voted for democracy. We must, folks, we must never, ever give up. Hold tight to your fight, because we got some fight to do. Daryl.
Thank you, Barbara, and certainly a great thanks to Dr. Kyler Wiltz, who's been with us on this show, and we know he'll be back for more TJC and more Igniting Change. Great love and thanks to Jonah Minkoff-Zern with the Public Citizen, who's one of our partner organizations that presented the National Town Hall last night. Also, you know, much respect and much appreciation to Terry O'Neill, Attorney Terry O'Neill, former president of the National Organization for Women. And Barbara, I cannot leave off. I'm giving her a new title, America's Professor.
Watch out.
Crenshaw. If America would just let them teach you and listen, we'd be such a much better nation. Folks, it's time to get off those sidewalks, get into the streets. Let's get out there. Let's get registered. Let's show up and protest those appointees that are against the interests of our community. United, we can do all things. United, we can do all things. Let's unite. Let's get into the streets. Let's register our protest. 202-224-3121 is the number to call to protest the appointments that are being there, being certain that your members of Congress are certain that they hear you and your voice and your protest. Folks, until next Tuesday, noon Eastern Standard Time, peace.
Peace.
The preceding program was paid for by Barbara Arnwine.
If you came across a child struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? Their age? The way they speak? Would you recognize a 13-year-old boy who gets into fights at school?
Not because he's a boy, but because he's hungry?
Or a 2-year-old girl who cries all night?
Not because she's sick, but because she went to bed without enough to eat.
Or maybe a 9-year-old boy who hopes a friend invites him to a sleepover.
Not for fun, just so he can have dinner.
Or a 15-year-old girl who goes for walks over lunch,
so her friends won't know she doesn't have anything to eat.
I am the 1 in 7 American children who struggle with hunger. Kids you pass by every day, but never knew were hungry. I am Child Hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong.
1450 WOL, Washington, D.C. WDCJ, Washington 95.9. WMMJ HD2. WKYS HD2. And worldwide at WOLDCNews.com.
The views and opinions of the following show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of News Talk 1450.